Lani Gwala on 702.
For the curious.
Live.
Online.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
DSTV.
And 92.7.
And 106 FM.
6 minutes after 12. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Thursday edition of the Lani Gwala Show. You're on 702 and Cape Talk. It is great to be with you this afternoon. We're coming to you live from our Johannesburg studios, and we're keeping you in touch with your world as it happens. And again, so much to go through over the next 54 minutes here on the show. Just a short while ago, I received a statement from the Department of Public Enterprises. It's a statement that says that Minister Pravin Gordhan's statement to the Zondo Commission of Inquiry was inexplicably leaked to the media. The ministry is now receiving numerous inquiries from the media. However, we are not in a position to respond given the regulations governing the commission. So what I'll try and do, though, is because this matter is already out there and has been reported by so many media houses, we'll get just the gist of the statement that the Minister Pravin Gordhan will be making to the Zondo Commission. We'll talk to Karen Morn of Tiso Black Star just to get a sense of what are some of the key elements of this statement that will be made. Because if you look at what the Public Enterprises Ministry is saying, they're not denying that it's their statement. They're saying that it just was inexplicably leaked to the media. So obviously, they're not querying the accuracy of the content that's been reported. They just say they don't know how it was leaked to the media. So we'll talk to Karen Morn about it. That's coming up in a short while. Again, if you've picked up anything from the widely reported statement and you want to raise it with us, you remember the numbers, you can call me on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567.
702. Lani Gwala, 12 to 1.
See, the National Union of Mine Workers has lashed out at Eskom over its plans to retrench workers. I don't know if you saw that yesterday, Eskom issued a statement in which they say that the only way to save the company from collapse is through this process of retrenchment. Apparently, they're retrenching senior managers, though. That's where it is at this stage. But you've got to worry. Well, I mean, I suppose, you know, the question is whether or not it will remain just at the management level. That's one. Or will it go through the entire company? And you must remember Jabu Mabuza, the chairperson of the board, I think it was around August when he was in parliament, where he was just talking about how bloated the company is at every level. So it seems as if there's retrenching happening at Eskom. We spoke to the spokesperson before we came on air, just wondering whether he can come on and clarify this issue. He says the company is currently talking to the affected parties where this matter is concerned. But what we'll do is we'll get reaction from COSATU about these retrenchments that were announced at Eskom yesterday. And again, if you know, maybe you're an insider and you understand the plans after this. It seems to be affecting management at the moment, but what are the plans going forward? Perhaps you have an idea. Please let us know. It's 9 minutes after 12.
Lani Gwala on 702.
For the curious.
A couple of other stories, of course, that we are also looking at. This is a developing story. And again, if you're a parent affected by this, let me know. A story that I picked up earlier on, about 748 pupils are waiting in limbo here in Gauteng for placements at various schools. The provincial department revealed yesterday that schools, especially those in Johannesburg Central, Johannesburg East and Tshwane South districts, have reached full capacity. About 257,648 pupils have already been placed. Of those, 136,700 are for grade 1 and 120,900 are for grade 8. Is your child in one way or another affected by this? I know it's a developing story. We seem to be getting, obviously we're getting different figures every day because the department argues that they are placing these pupils on a daily basis. So if your child has been affected, if you are a parent and have been struggling to place your child and you want to raise that with us, please send me a quick voice note, 072-702-1702, 10 after 12.
The Lani Gwala Show.
The Lani Gwala Show.
On 702.
Well, back to our top story this afternoon. The Department of Public Enterprises issuing a very short statement a short while ago talking about the widely reported contents of Minister Pravin Gordhan's statement that he will make to the Zondo Commission. They say, this is the ministry now, that the statement was inexplicably leaked to the media. They're saying they're receiving a number of inquiries now, but they're not in a position to respond. And they are referring all of these inquiries to the Zondo Commission. Commission to respond. But what are some of the key elements that are coming out of Minister Pravin Gordhan's statements? We on the line now to Karen Morn, a journalist at Diso Black Star. Karen Morn, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Much appreciated. All right. You probably obviously have received the statement as well, where the department says it doesn't know how this statement was leaked to the media, but it's been around for quite a while.
Yes, I mean, well, I must remember that this the case, the Zondo Commission was postponed for quite some time, and the statement was then submitted to a number of people implicated. And I think a number of people have seen it. There have been a number of reports about it, because its subject matter is so material to the public interest and addresses issues like the nuclear deal, like the crisis of SAA, like Donnell, of course, former President Jacob Zuma's current attorney being implicated there. So these are issues which I think are going to continue to gain traction within the media environment.
Sure. Let's just come back to some of the themes, and I know you've alluded to some of the key themes in his statement, but just take us through, for instance, what is he saying about the nuclear debacle that's been going on for a very long time in this country?
I think he's really reinforced this kind of evidence that we saw, first of all, from Nkabisi Jonas, who very much put forward to the commission that he believed that the removal of Nhlanhla Nene was linked quite powerfully to the nuclear deal. We saw that being reinforced by Nene himself, who said his removal came after quite a heated meeting between himself and the president over the nuclear deal and the relationship with Russia. What's fascinating with Pravin Gordhan is that he makes it clear that Zuma's nuclear aspirations came from as early as 2011, 2013, that the president himself was involved in the transformation of a cabinet committee that was designed to provide advice on the nuclear, on a possible nuclear deal arrangement, and that he changed the chairmanship of that, or was involved in the changing of the leadership of that committee to put himself at the helm. But his belief that he said it was very clear that former President Jacob Zuma was very focused on achieving a nuclear deal and a nuclear deal with Russia.
Sure. But you alluded to this, he talks about Dudumieni and the issues at SAA. Apparently, he received a call in late December 2015 while driving on the N2 highway in Cape Town. This call came from the former President Zuma. What was he talking about?
Well, his basic impression was that we know that Nhlanhla Nene also raised this. He said that, Dudumieni wanted to enter into certain financial arrangements involving the Airbuses that would have been completely financially unsustainable for SAA, which was, as it is now, lurching from one financial crisis to another. And he wasn't, content with this at all. He then received a call from the president about this whole issue, which he said made it very clear to him that Dudumieni had in fact contacted the president and asked him to potentially put pressure on Pravin Gordhan. It's also fascinating because he says that when he took over the helms of the ministry from Des Van Rooyen after his disastrous 4 days in office, he made it very clear to the president that his three primary concerns were the position of SAA, were this issue of the nuclear deal, and also was the position and the leadership of Tom Moyane over SARS. And he said to the president that at that stage that these issues needed to be addressed as a matter of urgency. Of course, we know that in that time they actually were not.
Sure. The other issue is the issue that led to the resignation of the former finance minister Nhlanhla Nene, his relationships with the Guptas. What is Pravin Gordhan saying about his relationship with the Guptas? Has he ever met them?
He has said that he has met them. He said that that they were in a presidential box with him. I think he said the period was between 2009 and 2014 at a cricket match. That he may have, in fact, met them with a very a billionaire businessman. He also said that President Zuma, he believed, had introduced him to Ajay Gupta at some stage. But certainly, he doesn't reveal that there were any of these kind of one-on-one meetings that we've seen in the evidence of, for instance, someone like Nkabisi Jonas or Nene himself. I mean,
Karen Morn, have I lost you now?
Can you hear me now?
No, I can hear you. Just one quick and final question, Karen. So far, President Jacob Zuma's lawyers have said that they will not be responding, they won't be participating because they don't see anything that implicates former President Jacob Zuma directly. It seems from the statement by Pravin Gordhan that he's directly now implicated in some of these issues of state capture. What have they said so far? Because as I understand it, the commission has an obligation to tell the lawyers that they will be implicated in a particular statement. Have they reacted at all?
They have been notified that they are, in the view of the commission, implicated by a Gordhan statement. My understanding is at this point is that they have not decided to seek to cross-examine Gordhan, and the attitude that they've sort of expressed, some of the sources within that that legal team is that, you know, if the president felt that a nuclear deal was appropriate, why was this a problem? And that they don't necessarily feel that there's any kind of smoking gun evidence that implicates him in anything that amounted to an ethical violation. What I think will be interesting is that I think that someone like Daniel Mancha may well seek to cross-examine Gordhan. He does implicate a number of people. He implicates, for example, Lynn Brown again. So we may see some applications for cross-examination. But to be honest with you, Golani, given the stance that the former president has taken to this commission, I would be quite surprised if he seeks to cross-examine Gordhan.
All right, fantastic. Karen Morn, listen, I really, really appreciate your time this afternoon. Karen Morn is a journalist at Tiso Black Star. Certainly, all eyes on this statement, people wanting to know what's going to happen then after Pravin Gordhan makes his submission to the commission. Interesting that there was a tweet earlier on about an hour or so ago from Floyd Chivambo on this matter. And Floyd's take on it is that in his submission to the Commission on State Capture, Pravin Gordhan claims that he forgot whether Ajay Gupta was in a meeting he held in 2010 with an Indian billionaire to talk about business deals. He previously denied having met the Guptas. Fact is that he lied to Parliament. That's Floyd's take on the reported statement by Pravin Gordhan so far. What is your take? Let me know. It is 17 after 12.
702.
Kolani Gwala.
Weekdays.
12 to 1.
All right, a statement then from Eskom yesterday suggesting that there will be some retrenchments happening at the Parastatal. Now, we put a call through to Eskom earlier on to get their side of the stories and get details about this planned retrenchment. And they say that they are still in the process of consulting those affected. But I see the National Union of Mine Workers, among others, have already reacted to this issue. But let's talk now to Mike Shingange, who is the Deputy President of the Confederation of South African Trade Unions, KASATU. Mr. Shingange, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time.
Afternoon, Colin, and your listeners.
Thank you. Well, so Eskom is going ahead then with the retrenchments. What's your reaction?
Our reaction is that, firstly, we are very disappointed that Eskom is embarking on what we will call an illegal retrenchment, because in terms of Section 189 or in terms of the Labour Relations Act, if you want to retrench people who belong to a union, you have to issue a Section 189 to the union affected, and then you start a consultation. As things stand, as you will have seen from our affiliate, NUM, there has not been a consultation. So we think that even if people must be retrenched in terms of operational requirements, they can't be retrenched illegally. That's our first thing. But the second thing is that we feel very disappointed that state-owned enterprises seems not to take into consideration the fact that we recently had a job summit in which a framework by stakeholders, including the government, was signed about the country finding solutions to the job loss that is taking place in the country, including defending the jobs that are there and creating new ones. And our view is that they are disregarding everything that framework is containing. So that's our take. And we think that it's not something that we're going to be taking lying down.
All right, but let's just look at what the particularly Eskom has been saying. In August, the chairperson, Jabu Mabuza, was in Parliament, and he told Parliament that Eskom was overstuffed at all levels and would have to right-size. And we know the problems that Eskom is going through, financial problems, which obviously forced the company to right-size. What do you think, then, of that?
We're saying every process that must take place in any company where there are employees has to take place within the parameters of the law. In this case, if although they have not consulted with the trade union movement in terms of their business model that they are undertaking, But whatever they arrive at, they should consult. So if they come to a conclusion that certain workers must lose their employment, they can't go on media and announce it and go in parliament and announce where you have got the individuals that are affected, and these individuals belong to the union, and the act is clear what process must be followed. That's the first thing that we're here, because when you consult, then you got the side of the other party that are involved, and then you make sure that those people.
But just to clarify for those of us, of course, who are not involved in labor negotiations on a day-to-day basis, when Eskom says the Section 189 process has been approved by the board and that it has started, isn't that the process to then consult those who are affected? Isn't Section 189 the process to consult those who are affected?
No, Section 189, it means that an employer can retrench based on the operational requirements. But it further says that was that thing must happen, it means that the people must be consulted, not individuals, but the trade union that represents those workers must be. The Section 189 must be issued to the trade union that represents those workers. We are saying, in this instance, we hear it from the media, we hear it from Parliament. We, as a union, have not received a notice from the board that says this is what we want to engage in, because that engagement must be facilitated by the commissioner from the CCMA. So that's the part we are raising.
Sure. I just want to broaden the discussion and take it perhaps beyond just Eskom, because the SABC has also made an announcement. I think they're looking at retrenching almost 2,000 workers. So clearly, that story that came through, I think it was about 3 months ago, that there will be retrenchments in the public sector is becoming true. What then, COSATU, what can you do about it? Or should we expect anything at all?
You're correct, Colan, because when we made noise about it and we tried to inquire, the powers that be in government, those who are biggest shareholders in terms of the state-owned enterprises, including the ministers in the public service, they categorically denied, including the president. You remember that the president was at the COSATU Congress recently, where he reaffirmed that there will be no retrenchments in the public service. We had a presidential job summit where a framework was signed that guaranteed that there is no plan by government and the parastatals that are under the government or controlled by government for retrenchment. So our view is either the state-owned enterprises boards and their CEOs are disregarding the directive from government. For instance, when you talk about the issue of the SABC, we have engaged with the minister involved there. We have engaged with the portfolio committee involved. We know the African National Congress there. All of them, they distance themselves from the process of retrenching. But the SABC seems to be going ahead. Now, what we think we want to do now, because we have a framework that has been signed by a head of the state that talks to guarantee of jobs. We're now calling for an urgent political council of the alliance partners, in this case the COSATU, the African National Congress, and all the parties that are there, to see if we can rescue the framework that we signed in the job summit. And if we can't, if we fail in that meeting to rescue that framework, it means we must take it apart and accept that everything as they said, and then it means it's war. That workers are going to understand that they're on their own and they must fight, and they must fight everywhere else necessary, because there's no use to having a framework signed on paper, but activities by state-owned enterprises, as you correctly said, including the public service, point to different directions. You remember that the Minister of Finance recently, in the mid-term budget statement, spoke to the bloated public service and the need to retrench, even though the leadership, in this case the state president and the Minister of Public Service and Administration, have categorically denied that there will be no retrenchment. So we think that the political leadership must need understand this rescue this framework. If we can't, we must understand that we go our separate way and then we're going to battle it out. On the webpage.
And just a quick clarification, if you say you're going to go your separate ways, are you then making good on the, well, let's say a promise not to support the ANC next year's election if they go ahead with the retrenchments?
I'm saying workers, once there's clarity that there will be no rescuing of the framework as led by the president of the state, we'll have to fight this thing politically. There's no limit in the battle, politically, in the workplace, and legally, and everywhere else we can. So whether that will mean going separate ways in terms of the political support in the election is something else. But what I'm saying, there's no formula. If workers are going to put their necks on the block and get cut every day, and there's nobody to rescue them, and if they realize that it's time for them to fight, it means they must fight with everything they got.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. A political council must come to clarity. We agree in that political council that there's nothing we can do to rein in on this board, to rein in on this SOE.
Xolani Gwala, taking your calls on 011-883-0702.
Coming up in a short while, we will look at the story of South African journalist and media advocate Angela Quintal and her Kenyan colleague Mutoki Mumo, who apparently are now under protection of the South African High Commission in Dar es Salaam after being released from 5 hours of detention overnight by Tanzanian immigration authorities. We'll look at that story. But I'm getting a lot of reaction on the story of retrenchments at Eskom. There is an SMS from McDonald who says, "Hi, Xolani, any kind of retrenchments in a country like ours with real unemployment rates sitting at 38% should be criticized, irrespective of whether it is senior managers or bargaining unit employees who are being retrenched, especially by a state-owned company. Senior managers, just like everyone else, have families to look after, bills to pay, and contribute immensely to the tax coffers of a country through high income tax, and retrenching them should not be treated lightly. The government is the first to make noise when mining firms want to retrench their employees, but is silent when SOEs are retrenching. How hypocritical critical of this government." That's according to McDonald's on SMS. A quick call from Moiboni in the south of Johannesburg. Moiboni, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Xolani.
Hi, very good.
Hi, I am sad to hear that Eskom is going to retrench some employees. You know what? We are looking at the problem now, but we need to find out what happened to Molefe. People who benefited, they are gone. Now, a lot of people are going to be retrenched. It's about time that we also stand and go to Molefe's house if it comes to a push.
Okay.
He has to answer as well. He has to pay some of the money back.
Okay, Moiboni in Joburg South. A quick one from Joseph in Pretoria. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, Xolani.
Hi.
My comment really is not about whether it's right for Eskom to go ahead and retrench or not. It's on the process. And I heard your interview with the deputy president of COSAT. My understanding is that management at Eskom came to the conclusion that the way out of this thing is perhaps to rationalize, to look at the number of employees.
Yeah.
And they needed to get an approval from the board, because the board is the highest governance structure at Eskom. They need, and obviously government is the shareholder. So management needed to get an approval to start engaging the union on the process. So I'm not sure why the union crying foul on the process.
Okay, so in other words, you're saying that so far the process is correct. You get the approval of the 108 of Section 189 first,
exactly.
And then you go to the unions,
and
whoever
then
else
you start
is.
Engaging the unions,
I hear you, Joseph is in Pretoria. Thank you. Listen, lots of other calls on this issue, and I will take these calls in a short while. Remember, there was a story I think reported by Reuters where they quoted a presentation made by one of senior managers. At Eskom in a strategy session, who said that Eskom intended to reduce headcount from 48,678 to 41,613 by 2023. So that's more or less what 7,000 jobs that will have to go between now and 2023 at Eskom. So what do you think then? We'll take your response on 011-883-0702 021-446-0567.
702. Xolani's on Twitter at Gwala X.
Indeed, I'm on Twitter, and I see a lot of you responding to the proposed retrenchments at Eskom. I think the views are divided right down the middle. There are those who are supportive of the retrenchments and saying that in order to deal with the problems at Eskom, you've got to deal with the bloated company. Others are saying that, but what do you expect these people to live off now in a country where there's such a high unemployment rate? So certainly we'll be looking at those in a short while. Another story that came out of Cape Town, which is quite interesting, and I'm going to try and get a comment in a short while for you. So the story is, with road accidents expected to increase during the festive season, the city of Cape Town is thinking about a 166 million rand 24-hour traffic service that will make roads safer and also to clamp down on lawlessness. If approved, Cape Town would have its own dedicated 24-hour traffic unit to patrol the city's roads night and day. Currently, only the provincial traffic officers operate a 24-hour basis, but are mostly focused in areas outside the metro and on provincial and national roads. Here's the question, though. What is the situation here in Johannesburg in particular? My understanding is that Johannesburg has had a 24-hour patrol system for quite a while. But does it make a difference? And maybe you might want to also clarify it and separate it for me, whether is it provincial that we see here in Johannesburg doing the 24-hour patrol, or is it the metro? My understanding is that it's the metro that have been doing these 24-hour patrols. But does it make a difference when it comes to lawlessness? Does it make a difference when it comes to clamping down on some of the reckless driving that happens, particularly late and early mornings and very late at night? So what are your experiences? Send me a quick SMS. It is 18 minutes now before 1.
The Kwelane Gwala Show.
Another interesting story that came through yesterday. Vodacom and Telkom have signed a multi-billion rand infrastructure leasing and roaming deal. Now, from June 2019, Telkom will use Vodacom's network to provide voice calls and faster internet services to its subscribers. Let's just talk a little bit more about this. What is in it for the consumer? Because ultimately, we as consumers are about, well, how are we to benefit out of this, or is it just the companies themselves that will increase their profit margins? We're on the line now to Serame Daukubong, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Telkom Consumer. Serame, nice talking to you this afternoon. Hi.
Good afternoon, Goleni. How are you doing?
I'm well. Are you well?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Fantastic. All right, then. Interesting announcement yesterday. But the question is, I can see how Vodacom immediately will benefit from this. Immediately, they'll obviously get an income from you using their infrastructure. But how does Telkom benefit out of this? Sorry.
Well, I think the key thing for us is the benefit to our consumers. So I think there's a couple of technical elements that I'll talk to. So first of all, the structure of the roaming is what we call seamless roaming. So currently what's been happening with customers is that if you're on one network, you're roaming to the next, you drop your call. So seamless roaming allows that call to be held right through. So first of all, it's a significant improvement on customer experience, which is quite a key thing for us. I think the second part is, you know, it is without doubt, Vodacom, in terms of their network expansion, do have the widest reach. So it means that Telkom subscribers now could have access to network capacity and good speeds on a far broader perspective than what they've currently been getting. So it's about improved customer experience and also for customers, better reach.
All right. So currently, with regards to what you refer to as seamless roaming, what is happening? Telkom consumers complaining of their calls being dropped?
Absolutely. So what you find, because we have been roaming with the previous provider, what we didn't have then, I mean, the roaming contract was existent since 2010, we didn't have the latest technology, which is seamless roaming. So you do find customers complaining quite a lot about dropped calls. So this will certainly improve that dropped call significantly.
But let me just talk about why you would want to use Vodacom's infrastructure as opposed to investing in building your own network.
The key thing with that is really speed to market, because to ramp up to build to that level, most of the operators have had a good 20 years to cover most of the country. Telkom Mobile is the youngest operator coming into the market. The best way to actually get to the market is quicker is to jump on the back of others. So this allows us then to extend the Telkom service quicker than just building on your own. So it'll be a combination of both. We will be continuing our own build, but right now just being able to latch on the back of Vodacom's network means that more Telkom customers can have access to our good data propositions.
And the reason why I'm asking about your own network is that we're talking about migration, DTT migration, which will make available a very important spectrum for the telcos. So there's obviously quite a bit of space there for you to explore as Telkom.
Absolutely. So the key thing for us is this gives us opportunity ahead of whatever is going to be finally decided on regulation to say the capacity we have now and the spectrum we have access to now, particularly the 4G LTE spectrum, how can we get our subscribers to have access to both that? And this opportunity, because it's a multiple roaming agreement, 2G, 3G and also LTE means that particularly our very popular data propositions, customers can now have access to them and also enjoy the experience.
All right. Just a couple of questions that some of our listeners have sent through. Somebody wants to know, so when roaming on Vodacom, will data costs be the same? In other words, will you still be paying telecom costs?
So what we do have in our data propositions is an off-net and an all-net proposition. So I think the key thing there for customers is to understand, to look at what package they've bought. We do have packages which are for all-net, i.e. it allows you to roam across all networks. We do have those that are telecom-specific. So the details are quite clear in terms of what that means. The intent is to, one, have more availability and definitely not to increase the cost for our customers.
But specifically when you move from Telkom to Vodacom, will there be an increase in the amount of money you'll pay?
So once the call has been made or the data transaction has been made, the customer is not charged for that movement.
Just a final one. I mean, this is like a principle. When people talk about competition, they say ultimately it affects the price and we should benefit as consumers. But when a company is using a competitor's infrastructure, what happens then to this concept of competition?
Well, I think if you look at competition, the key thing of if you're using more volume, you're actually sweating the asset more, which means that the effective cost of producing data becomes lower. Therefore, that does affect pricing. So it's really about maximizing your assets a bit more.
All right. Let me thank you for coming through, Serame Daukobong, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Telkom Consumer. I wonder what you think about this deal here between Vodacom and Telkom. It is 12 minutes before 1.
702. SMS Kulani on 31702.
We'll look at your SMSs shortly. But let me talk about South African journalist Angela Quintal, who also is a media advocate, together with her Kenyan colleague, Mutoki Mumo, who apparently are now under the protection of the South African High Commission in Dar es Salaam after being released from 5 hours of detention overnight by Tanzanian immigration authorities. Let's get the latest. We're on the line to SANEF Executive Director Kate Skinner. Kate, good afternoon to you. Thank you for coming on.
Hello.
Much appreciated. All right, so what I've just read now as an introduction is information that came through about 5 hours or so ago. Has this changed at all?
Yes. We were a bit worried about the fact that there was an issue around the fact that these journalists didn't have their passports. Their passports had been held, so they'd been released. But obviously, without your passport, you can't leave the country. You're not free to kind of move around. But what has happened now is those passports have actually been returned to them, and they can actually, in fact, return to South Africa, or they can fly out of the country. So that is something that just came in, in the last kind of 5 minutes or so. But we're still not aware of why they were held for 5 hours, and I think that is one of the key questions that we need to ask. Why did they have to be subjected to this interrogation?
Sure. What were they doing in Tanzania? Do we know?
So we're not fully aware of it, but they were. Our understanding is that they were there with the CPJ, which is the Committee to Protect Journalists, which is an international organisation, and they were on one of their visits to Tanzania. But we're not aware of any particular details of that visit, but certainly what we were told was there was nothing particularly controversial about it. They were kind of there on their visit. Angela Quintal is actually the head of the Africa Programme Coordinator, and so she's constantly in Africa, constantly in various countries, sort of checking the situation. But there wasn't anything, as far as we understand, that was controversial in terms of what she was doing there.
And just final
kind of standard visit.
Yeah, final one. Just maybe, what do we know about the state of media and media freedom in Tanzania?
So that's the interesting thing. I mean, it's certainly, it is not one of the countries that has particular problems in terms of the media. And I think that's what we are now a bit concerned about, because there haven't been these kinds of, arrests of journalists or questioning of journalists. And so there seems to be some kind of shift.
All right. For now, Kate Skinner, I must thank you very much. Kate Skinner is the executive director at SANEF, breaking that story for us then. The two journalists and media advocate, Angela Quintal, and her Kenyan colleague, Mutoki Mumo, now have their passports and can leave Tanzania. But of course, what still is unclear is why they were detained in the first place.
702.
Kolani Gwala. Email him on xg@702.co.za.
Some of your SMSs about that deal between Vodacom and Telkom. There's Richard in Tembisa who says, this Telkom-Vodacom deal won't make much difference because Vodacom itself has a pathetic network. Another one saying, roaming is too expensive, Kolani. I left Vodacom because it is expensive and I joined Telkom in rural areas. Telkom is roaming with MTN and very expensive. Kolani, being a Telkom subscriber, I welcome this move by Telkom as the current arrangement with MTN is not effective. Another one, being a Telkom subscriber, I think that this is going to benefit us in a very big way. That's Opa in Rustenburg. A lot of your SMSs there. We'll look at them a little later on. But let's turn now to this story out of Cape Town. And this is the story about a 24-hour traffic service that is being suggested in Cape Town in order to clamp down on lawlessness. Let's get some details. We're on the line to JP Smith. He's a councillor at the City of Cape Town. It deals with issues of transport. Mr. Smith, nice talking to you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, good sir.
Thank you very much. What is the content of the proposal around this issue of 24-hour traffic units?
So Cape Town has slightly different from other cities. We have three separate enforcement services. We've got our Metro Police. We've got a law enforcement service that deals with municipal bylaws. They're called public safety units elsewhere in South Africa. And we've got a traffic department. Remember, our core constitutional mandate is traffic and bylaw enforcement as local authorities. So at night, Metro Police does that law, that does all three services, but during the day, traffic and law enforcement are doing their core bits, allowing Metro Police to focus on the crime prevention. And we have never had nighttime traffic and law enforcement. They've always just been predominantly daytime. We now have started the ball rolling to expand those to fully 24-hour services. The commitment made by the mayor in his opening address by Dan Plato starts paving the way for us to look at that. We have a meeting set up with him, and we've already started to expand the training college so that we can fast-track the training of additional staff to make these services properly, fully-fledged 24-hour services, as opposed to these skeleton crew that we have on duty at night now, which is largely for response to complaints.
Okay. And, you know, I've just had a message on Twitter from the MMC for Safety here in Johannesburg, Michael San, and he says, Edgwala X, I'm listening to your show. For the record, JMPD operates on a 24-7 basis. I just want to know what it is that you would have learned from the city of Joburg around this. Has it reduced the number of offences overnight? Has it assisted in terms of dealing with reckless driving?
So remember, we've got a slightly different focus or approach to this. And by the way, I'm a big fan of Michelson. I think he's a very capable MMC. But we've got a slightly different approach in terms of functional specialization. We believe that it is better to specialize in certain functional areas like traffic or bylaw enforcement or gang units, etc. So we've piloted the whole special unit approach. And as you see now, SAPs have followed suit with the gang unit here in Cape Town. We do believe that you get better results in that way. There's probably a reason why Cape Town as a city is the only city that has either year on year stabilized or reduced our road fatalities, whilst elsewhere in South Africa we've seen those figures inch steadily upwards. And that's part of a broader campaign. It's not just enforcement. There are other elements to it. But the enforcement has played a role. And making sure that your enforcement is corruption-free, et cetera. Your MPD is quite correct, is 24 hours, so is Cape Town Metro Police. But there's a lot of muscle that sits in our law enforcement and traffic services, and they've never been properly 24 hours. And now, finally, we are at a point where we're able to do that. It's for us very exciting times. And that means at night, Metro Police can focus exclusively on crime prevention and not spend time dealing with nuisance complaints and traffic complaints, etc.
All right, that's JP Smith. He is the councillor at the City of Cape Town. I wonder what people in Cape Town think of this proposal then. Send me a quick text. It is 2.5 minutes before one. Well, let's just wrap up the show by looking at a story that broke about an hour and a half ago. Jason Roder has been found guilty of murder of his wife by the Western Cape High Court. Roder was also found guilty of obstructing the ends of justice. And let's talk to Shamila Fisher, who's looking at the story for us. Jason then found guilty. Hey, Shamila, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kalani. Yes, he's been found guilty. Basically, Judge Riyad Salih-Shilope has accepted the testimonies of all the state witnesses. She found Jason Edwards' testimony that his wife was suicidal after learning about his extramarital affair with a co-worker. She found that his testimony was quite improbable and puzzling, as in her own words. And she says that the state witnesses' evidence, for example, the handyman who was called to open the bathroom door, he testified that when he opened the door with a screwdriver, he found Susan Dredder lying on the floor with the hair iron cord placed loosely around her neck. This is different to what Jason Dredder testified. He said that he struggled to open the door because she was, when they opened the door eventually with a screwdriver, she was found suspended behind the door with the cord around her neck tightly. And she said that he was basically making it up as he was going along. There was no clear scenario that he was painting because she did not believe his testimony at all. Now his bail has been denied. He's in custody again, and sentencing proceedings will start on the 21st of November, with the defense indicating that they will bring an application for leave to appeal.
Okay. Shamila Fisher, listen, thank you very much for that report. EWN's Shamila Fisher reporting for us live from Cape Town. We're coming to the end of the show, but I need to reflect. Well, maybe I'll take one SMS because so many people responding to the retrenchments issue at Eskom. Somebody says, XG, a friend of mine at Eskom, due to retire in 2019, was offered an early retirement package deal last year. The offer was withdrawn, and the reason, no money. So you've got to wonder then, how are they going to pay all of these people that they are retrenching now, especially because these people appear to be people within the management band. So it's going to be a long, long negotiation, I'm sure. Thank you very much for listening to the show. Thank you for all of your responses on SMS as well as on Twitter.